As sure as his resurrection, an Easter sermon preached by Pastor Todd Wilkin.
He meets us here, not just an empty cross, not just an empty tomb, but the very risen Christ himself, the one who is the resurrection and the life.
We'll send you a CD of this sermon and a sermon on Job for any size gift during the 50 days of Easter. Make a secure online donation at issuesetc.org. Thanks for your support during the Easter season.
You don't see the Church of Satan doing a mockery of mosque worship. You don't see Satanism doing a mockery of a Buddhist meditation.
You go into the average big box evangelical church, you're going to get three or four verses from different translations ripped out of context that are strip mined in order to help make your life better.
He reigns from a font, he reigns from a pulpit, he reigns from a table. His crucified and risen presence, bodily, fleshly, continues to reign in the world.
Homeschool, family, love, issues, etc. We have issues.
There was an interesting conversation between Pope Francis and Prime Minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu. I don't think they wanted to talk about religion or theology or biblical history, but they veered into it a little bit over what language Jesus actually spoke. We're going to take up that question here on Issues, Etc. in about 10 minutes and answer the question, what language did Jesus speak during his so-called earthly ministry? In the meantime, we're going to go through the Issues, Etc. comment line and hear some of your comments, respond to as many as we can. A little bit later in hour two of Issues, Etc. This is the 25th anniversary of the Tiananmen Square crackdown on, human rights, Chinese religions, Christianity, you name it. We'll be playing a interview that we did sometime back with Dr. John Warwick Montgomery. He and his wife actually were on the last plane out of Beijing before they closed the airports 2 weeks before the Tiananmen Square, the famous incident in Tiananmen Square. And we'll talk about human rights, Chinese religions with Dr. John Warwick Montgomery in the second hour of Issues, Etc. Our Issues, Etc. comment line is always open for you. 618-223-8382. 618-223-8382. Questions, comments, show suggestions, criticisms. We will take it all and we try to respond as often as we can. Let's start with a comment about struggling with a specific sin.
I was listening to your recent broadcast on sex and marriage. I really enjoyed it. And I wanted to say that I am actually a Lutheran who is struggling with living a chaste life. I'm married, and I have kids. But I constantly struggle daily, fighting against the temptation of prostitutes, of porn, of lust, and I am tired of it. Your episode really helped strengthen me. In addition to that, I want to ask what resources, besides confession and absolution, I constantly go to that, would you recommend to help out in times of need? Thank you, and God bless all of the work that you do. Bye.
And thank you very much for the comment. He's referring there to the episode, I believe, that we did with Pastor Bill Swirla recently on sex, marriage, and divorce. You can listen to it as well at issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. You'll find it there, an interview with Pastor Bill Swirla. Now, first of all, let me commend you for what you've had to say there. First of all, an honest assessment of yourself. It is very encouraging as a pastor, I'm not your pastor, but as a pastor, for me to hear you say, I'm tired of it. That is the Christian's attitude toward sin. I am tired of it. Not only tired of the struggle, but tired with the sin itself. Only the new man can say, I hate my sin. I hate the old, even though the new man is not beset with sin. He hates the old Adam with a righteous hatred, and he wants to see him die. And it sounds like that's exactly what you're saying. And to talk about a chaste life, even within marriage, chastity has a shape. Outside of marriage, it's abstinence. And it has a different shape inside of marriage, and that is monogamy, faithfulness to one's spouse. And you're absolutely right to identify not just the various actions, various things that you might be tempted to do or do as the problem, but in fact, the struggle with temptation. The only person who is tempted without sin is Jesus. The rest of us are tempted with sin. Not to be tempted is sin, but we were always enticed by the things that tempt us. So that's my commendation to you, that you are absolutely in the right place. I would encourage you, and it sounds like you've already availed yourself of that, but I would encourage you to simply wear out that path to your pastors. The best resource. I don't at the tip of my mind have any kind of written resource to suggest to you, although I'm sure they're out there. But I would weed carefully through them because most of them are probably bad. Most of them are going to tell you to try harder, do something, do this, do that. You are already doing the best thing to struggle against sin. The only thing the Christian is actually given to do in this case, and that is to wear out a path to your pastor. If you haven't availed yourself of private confession and absolution, and it sounds like you may, in fact, be doing that, I'm not sure, I would run, not walk, to my pastor in times of struggle. When you're tempted to go out and hit the streets, I would suggest you drive straight to your pastor's house. He will not mind seeing you. He won't. Pick up the phone, give him a call, and do what your pastor's there for. And it sounds like you know full well what your pastor's there for. He is there to hear your confession and to absolve you and to counsel you with God's powerful word against this temptation and sin. The old Adam is killed when sins are confessed. He's put to death. The old Adam is drowned in the waters of baptism when you confess to your pastor. So the best advice, sounds like you're already taking it, I can possibly give you, is to wear out a path to your pastor and confess and hear his absolution.
This is Herman calling May 28th and commenting on two previous guests I believe encompassed in the month. David Virtue commenting on the divorce of the homosexual marriage of the Episcopalian Bishop Robinson, and Dr. Jennifer Roback Morris, I believe, commenting on the lesbian thriple arrangement of marriage and partnership in Massachusetts, as a number of federal judges, in all knowing wisdom of which the world has never seen, gleefully bang their gavels that state constitutions and laws defining marriage as between man and woman are declared unconstitutional. One wonders if this kind of relational attack on traditional marriage and the centrifugal forces opened by it in the sexual revolution also will undermine all of these other contrivances as well. What guarantee, given their own nature of internal dysfunction, is there that they're going to survive? What happens in that thruple if one of the women it becomes interested in a man and wants to leave the relationship? Did their lawyer who worked up those arrangements also have embedded in that contract a prenuptial agreement of sorts? So David Virtue made a comment in his column, which I linked to off your site, that all of these sexual combinations being proposed would number somewhere in the number of 70, which means you couldn't even build enough bathrooms to accommodate every particular predilection there would be. So this so-called brave new world of relational chaos has to take cognizance of the chaos opened on the definition and the institution of man-woman marriage would also be chaos that encompasses these things, as is the nature of sin inherently anyway. So it'd be interesting to see how what goes around comes around, as they say, and gets bitten in the rear. Well, good program for the month. Thank you.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. These relationships are contrary to nature and contrary to nature's God, so to speak. And because of that, they are inherently, they will erode. It's hard enough for the natural relationship that God created to be maintained, much less unnatural ones.